You are now listening to Shonen Sunday, a Patreon-exclusive podcast from the creators of the Shoujo Sunday podcast, Gianna Luna and Chika Supreme. Brace yourself for reactions and conversations on what it takes for an anime to move from being slightly popular to becoming a well-renowned classic. Listener discretion is advised.
Shoujo and Shonen fans, let us welcome Ryan Colt Levy to the Shonen Sunday / Shoujo Sunday podcast. We are so thankful that you agreed to come on and join us this evening.
It is my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. Hi, everybody.
Hi, absolutely. So we also want to congratulate you on winning the Best Voice Actor Performance in English for your role as Denji in Chainsaw Man for the 2024 Crunchyroll Anime Awards. We were so ecstatic to see you win, Ryan.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you. I was so surprised. I was like, it's going to be Johnny.
Really?
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, everybody who was nominated is so amazing. I mean, some close friends were nominated. Mm-hmm. Lexi and Marissa are both so amazing. I mean, it's everybody, honestly, on that roster was just like absolutely so stellar. So it was cool to, you know, they say it's that cliche, it's an honor to be nominated. So, yeah, I was actually sleeping during the award ceremony and my mom was up East Coast time, so it was technically later or earlier for her, however you want to consider it. It was like 3 or 4 a.m. And she's an early riser, but I told her, she was like, what time's the stream? And I'm like, it's gonna be really early for you, mom. And she's like, I don't care. So I'm the one who was sleeping, and she's the one who saw it first and sent me a text and was like, you fucking won. Sorry, I don't know if I can curse.
No,
on
you
here.
Absolutely.
No, you can.
Yeah,
you can. We're explicit. It's fine.
Yeah.
Well, no, that was her response. So
that's fantastic. We love like a mom number one fan situation.
Yeah.
Oh, she's the best. Yeah.
Yeah. Being up at 3 a.m. is a really
legit
big
commitment. Yeah. And I'm like, no, sleep. Don't worry. Like, it's it's fine. And she's like hell, I'm going to be sleeping.
Oh, that is so sweet. So we just want to set the scene here. Let us set the scene.
Sure.
In 2022, the famed voice actor, ADR director, and your friend Mike McFarland calls you to let you know that you have been chosen to voice Denji in Chainsaw Man. This is after you specifically told your agents that this is a role you want to try out for since you read and loved the manga. And this is also after you saw the Chainsaw Man main stage event with MAPPA CEO Manabu Otsuka.
Yeah,
well,
you're doing your homework.
Yes, we did. We try to be thorough here on Shoujo Sunday. And producer Makoto Kimura at the 2022 Crunchyroll Expo. And after you sort of mentally brushed off the idea of you being chosen since you were sure they might choose a voice veteran instead, how did getting the exact role that you wanted make you feel?
It's still surreal. It's still actually really hard to fully process because so much has happened in now the last year and a half, almost 2 years, which is crazy come summertime. Yeah, that the wildest part about the Crunchyroll Expo was that was the day that the auditions actually went out to everybody. So wow. I remember walking out of that event and just being like, oh my God, this is everything I was hoping it would be. And I was convinced at that point, specifically, like, as you said, I kind of like put it aside, but especially at that point, because I was doing the mental math of like, the show's going to be out in like 2 months at that point. So I thought for sure they had been recording it already and it was already, you know, they were just super, super hush about it. And, yeah, then all of a sudden my phone starts going crazy because everyone's getting the auditions and everyone's like, holy crap, you know. So it was a very surreal thing. But I mean, from that moment, Mike called me and he knew that he had to call me before because I technically got like the official email like 2 days later that week because he called me over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think he just knew that I needed to get like talked off of the ledge because I was gonna freak out. So he was really, really gracious about doing that. And yeah, it's been incredible. Every moment of it, from recording to having the cast and crew that we got to work with and still get to work with, the movie announcement that just happened. I mean, everything that has continued, all of the traveling I've been so fortunate to be able to do. I've met so many amazing people. It's really changed my life in so many ways, you know, internally, externally, everything. And I'm so grateful, and I'm still trying to process it. It's wild. I mean, I just moved into a new place, but this is my Denji shelf over there.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
So I'm working on making it a little bit more organized, but it's wild right now. Just I'm so over the moon. It's so much fun to just get to play in a world that I already loved, but to be the guy that I care about so much and be able to like give everything to him is really special.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great. Yeah, we're both passionate creatives ourselves, so it's really wonderful to like see people soaring and doing something that they love so much.
That's so kind of you. Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way when I see my friends getting cool opportunities and you know, things I know they wanted. I remember the craziest thing is it wasn't that far ahead of me getting Denji that my friend Kira Buckland booked Jolene in part 6 of JoJo.
Yeah.
And that was for years for her, like her ultimate dream role. So
aww.
I remember the day that happened, and like we all as a collective, like the internet and the voiceover community, everyone just like lost their minds over that for her in celebration. And I was like, well, I mean, that's it. That's lightning striking. Like that doesn't happen twice, you know. So mm-hmm. And then it did, and it's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Yeah, we love that. We love it so much. I guess before we actually get further into the Chainsaw Man questions, we want to start off with some intro stuff. So,
yeah.
How were you first exposed to anime?
The very, very beginning, I was pretty young. I mean, considering culturally how hard it was to like seep into the States back then. But I was a kid on my school bus, like in like third, fourth grade in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I had a kid on my bus who had the manga for Dragon Ball. And I remember it wasn't even translated to English. It was just, I loved comics as a kid. I already loved superheroes, all that kind of stuff. And he was kind of my like bus friend, you know, everybody
yeah.
like, you know, had their buddy on the bus that like you at least had that ride with that you could chill. And I think we were in different grades and everything, but I remember he was always reading this really cool looking manga. And I, you know, to me, it was just a black and white comic, you know,
yeah.
and I see these characters and the crazy hair and the muscles, and I just kind of, I couldn't, you know, obviously I couldn't read Japanese, but I felt like because it's such a fun, fighty kind of thing, I understood what I needed to understand to just fall
yeah.
in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then cut to me trying to draw, you know, Goku and Vegeta and all these guys. And I think to me it was the aesthetic and everything that first really stuck out to me. And then I saw some Dragon Ball cartoons on like VHS, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
and then it got to, I want to say when Toonami happened and I was a bit older, and then it was a little bit more kind of, it was being curated more for audiences by, you know, thankfully by some wonderful people. And,
yeah.
Cowboy Bebop was like the first real one that like really kind of blew
like
me
stuck.
Away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to be fair, I had watched Pokemon as a kid as well. You know, that was
yeah.
like,
mm-hmm.
but as far as we knew, it was like in a Saturday morning cartoon to us. So I just kind
yeah.
of
yeah.
connected it all with everything. And only in hindsight did I realize. But Cowboy Bebop was the first that really, especially because I was a kid who, even at a very young age, I loved cinema. I like movies like Blade Runner and Alien and stuff like that. Like that was my thing. So that to me was like the aesthetic of like, oh, you can do those kinds of stories, because I just didn't know. And and then, you know, Samurai Champloo, and obviously same creator, and kind of went on from there. And I got more into, you know, like Gundam and like all, just I kind
yeah.
of learned a lot more about what was going on and became fascinated by it. And I was a big video game guy, so obviously I love JRPGs, and you know, I mean, Zelda has been a major influence since I was a child. So I've always kind of been integrated one way or another. But I mean, I had no idea that even then that there was such a community around it. I didn't, yeah. I just didn't realize it. You know, I was, when I wanted to pursue acting as a kid, I wanted to be like a filmmaker and a theater guy and, you know, on film and TV. So I didn't think about voiceover as a career trajectory. And for whatever reason, even with Western cartoons, like I just watched this stuff and I didn't put together like that's yeah. an actor, you know? Yeah.
And like you could do this.
Right.
Yeah. So I never grew up wanting to like do voiceover or like voice anime or anything. It was there for me without me realizing that I needed it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like Gianna and I were actually very similar. I think though, we'd switch it out rather than it being Dragon Ball. Like we got into anime because of Sailor Moon.
And, I was just going to say, it's got to be Sailor yeah, Moon,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
And then getting the VHSs and yep. then having that like particular anime that's like, oh, I like anime. For me, it was Inuyasha. What was it for you, Gianna?
Oh, nice.
Oh, see, after having watched like Sailor Moon and like Pokemon like as a kid, I like veered away from that through most of my youth. And when I was in college, somebody showed me Death Note and I was like,
oh,
this
you
is
went
cool.
right to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. this is so cool. And then I immediately went into like, oh, Fruits Basket or On High School Host Club, like the softer yeah. stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you, cause I feel like, when did you guys find Studio Ghibli stuff? Because for me, it was the VHS era. It was video stores where I would – like I had like a ritual with my family where we would go every Friday, go to yeah. the VHS store and pick like a weekend's worth of movies. Sometimes it was just based on the cover. And I often would gravitate to like My Neighbor Totoro, Kiki's Delivery Service. You know, so there, I even saw that stuff like before I knew what it was.
Yeah, for me, Ghibli, I know my first was Kiki's Delivery Service. I can't remember if it was VHS or not. I do have a distinct memory of seeing Spirited Away win, like, the Oscar. And then afterward, my sister was just yeah. like, oh, you should watch this film. And then so she bought it for me. And I was like, oh, I love this. And then similarly, like going to the video store, I was always going to Blockbuster. And that is kind of the fortunate but unfortunate reason why I saw Perfect Blue at an age I really shouldn't have watched
we're
it.
We're not prepared for it. Yeah, yeah,
was
yeah.
not prepared for it. My parents were just like, oh, it's cartoons. And then I was just like, whoa. Oh,
yep.
this is a lot. Yeah. I mean, I loved it, but still just kind of like,
huh, that's something.
I remember renting the Street Fighter 2 anime as a kid because I was like, it's Street Fighter. And it's like so adult and I was not ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as Studio Ghibli goes, I distinctly remember junior year of high school, my friend had us all over for a movie night. And he was like, we gotta watch this movie. You guys will love this movie. And I ate that up right away. And I wasn't even really thinking about it as like anime at the time. It was like, oh, this studio made a really interesting movie. And now I just want to watch all the other movies that this studio made. And like, I somehow wasn't like connecting like, you like anime, girl. Watch more anime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. One last intro question before we move sure. into My Hero stuff. So I guess, when did you start collecting manga, and do you plan on collecting the stories that you have voiced or anything of interest to you?
So that's kind of the part of what makes this all so wacky is like, I really don't collect that much manga. I guess to kind of like bookend the initial question, like after I discovered all of that anime and everything, I kind of then accidentally almost took a long break. You know, I became obsessed with guitar and I started a band at 13. And basically the next like 20 years was more or less a blur of just like hyper focusing on that. And mm-hmm. me and my buddies, like I didn't have friends who were into anime. I was the guy, you know, so it was a lot easier to you know, have community around film and stuff like that. So I was always nerding out about films with friends, but anime was kind of my little thing. And I never, at the time, I never had people to like help me expand on it. And so I only really came back to a lot of this when I accidentally sort of fell into doing voiceover. And I rediscovered so much of what was going on and how amazing and eclectic it all is now. So I started to look into things, but it was that weird mix of like, I mean, you know, it's just like anything. There's so much out there. It is a mountain. Yeah. And sometimes I would find something and get kind of interested and, you know, fall off. And, you know, I'm admittedly, just like everyone, we all have our opinions and I could be snobby about stuff. And, you know, I wasn't finding anything that was like, I need to keep reading this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Chainsaw Man was the first time that I found something without even trying. And it like, it pulled me in such a way that I couldn't, there was not, I couldn't, you know, avoid it. Mm-hmm. I needed to consume it. And it was what made it all the more special because I felt like I had read other things, you know, here and there. And if I, my rule is like, you know, regardless of my awareness of a thing, if I booked a character that was substantial in a thing that had physical manga out, I would get it to just do the homework. You know, I did that with when I booked Moriarty the Patriot. Like, I hadn't read that until I got the part, and then I started reading it before we started working on it. You know, stuff like that. I mean, My Hero was one of the shows that I actually got back into watching anime with. So that was really like a big thing for me. But I wasn't reading the manga. Like, I just kind of, I just started watching the show. I came to it, I guess it was like season three or something like that. And so I just backtracked and started watching from the beginning. And I was like, oh, I'll get to reading this when it's all done kind of thing. So a lot of it was me just watching. And, you know, now, I mean, I've all the Fujimoto stuff. I've been collecting JJK. Like, there's certain books, Sakamoto Days, Kaiju Number 8. There's some things that I've really loved reading. And, you know, now at this point, it's kind of, it's open season as I find stuff. But it really was Chainsaw Man that, like, was the first one that I had read every single book. I'm up to date every week, like, the full kind of commitment in a way that I really never had before. And it wasn't like, oh, I hope, you know, they do this and I get to be it. It was just, this is my favorite thing.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like kismet in that way.
It's so weird.
Yeah,
it's so
it found
weird.
You, it sounds like.
I mean, I really feel that way, you know, to an extent. Because it's like, there's a million reasons why it shouldn't have been me. There are so many other people that are capable of doing this. Like, I am a firm believer of, like, you know, I'm not special. I'm just an actor. You know, like, I just care a lot about what I do. You know, and I just don't think it's, you can't pretend that other people can't do your job, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I just think that there's something really amazing about when I found the story, where I was in my life when I found the story, how I just really was able to understand it in a way that I needed it. Mm-hmm. And it was there for me when I didn't know that I needed something to be there. And it really saved me in so many ways. So it is it's more to me than like, I got this really cool role in a really popular thing. Like this, I've been saying it since day one, like this could have just been like a cool, weird niche thing that like only a couple of people liked, and it would still be this important to me. That's kind of what I thought it would be. You know, I didn't think this was going to be a global phenomenon like it is. You know, I'm glad it is. I'm glad so many people connect with it that way. And in hindsight, I get it. But reading it, I was like, this just like, there's no way this could be that, you know, big.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we're going to move into some My Hero Academia questions.
Cool.
So
there's a little, I don't know if you can see right here.
I can see it. I love it.
Yes.
For our audio listeners, he's got a little blanket back there draped over
his
couch.
That actually was made for me. It's, there's an image that when Rhodey won like a fan, was like part of a fan poll thing. Mm-hmm. And there was this beautiful artwork from a couple of years ago of like all of them in this like snowy tundra. And a bunch of fans got together and like got that piece printed on a blanket for me. So
That's so sweet. Oh my goodness. Well, me personally, I was first exposed to your work when I went to go see My Hero Academia World Class Heroes in theaters. So I thought that your performance as Rhodey Soul was exceptional. And his journey really struck a deep chord with me, and I'm sure with many others who have also seen the film. And I just wanted to ask, what about Rhodey or his journey resonates with you the most?
He's such a special character. Mm-hmm. I loved getting to play him. I love that movie. That whole experience was so special. I mean, first and foremost, Colleen Klinkenbeard, who directed it and was casting and directing All of My Hero at the time, like, is just an absolute phenom. Her awareness of characters and the kinds of energy that they need to be portrayed, it's like she's got a weird sixth sense kind of thing where she just knows. I mean, I remember watching My Hero and thinking it was such a unique dub in the way that, like, it just, every, all the voices felt so particularly catered down to, like, the most, like, background whatever. Everything just felt so thought out in a way that I loved and was so charmed by. Mm-hmm. And I remember auditioning. She had sent me out some auditions for season 5, and I didn't think she knew who I was, you know, so I think it was one of those, like, someone had said something nice enough to put me on her radar, and she had sent out some auditions that were like a small list of people, and it was like, hey, if you're seeing this, you know, it's kind of a, like, you're essentially like, I'm testing you out, you're a new, you know, you're new to me, I'm like, you know, let's see what you can do kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I remember thinking, like, oh my gosh, this is a cool chance to be, like, a tiny part of this thing in any way, but also, which is how I usually think, is I'm not actually going to get this opportunity. So I looked at it as a really fun chance to just play with characters. And since she didn't know me, for her to just get a sense of how weird I could be and what I, you know, mm-hmm. just what I had to offer in that way. Because I was like, realistically, she's going to cast other people that she can trust and this and that. And but until then, let's have some fun. So I sent those in, and then like 5 months go by. So that's a very long time. You know, you don't book it, you know, right. Usually it's like a few weeks. So I'm like, and like, you know, a few weeks in, I made my peace with it, you know, cause I just, that's just how this works. You know, you don't, you really don't, like, you audition and you just throw it away because you can't keep, like, thinking and hoping on the stuff. It'll just make you crazy. Mm-hmm. And to me, to me, the opportunity is the most exciting thing more than anything else. So I was just like, that was cool. And like 5 months to the day, she emails me again and she's like, hey, we're working on this movie and there's this character named Rhodey I think you'd really be great for. Would you do it, essentially? And I remember seeing the trailer, you know, a while ago and seeing that character and trying to, like, place, like, where do I, like, and I looked him up and all that there was just that one image of him. And it just said, like, you know, boy from Othion, and very, like, nondescript. And I was like, whatever this is going to be so special. I need to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I obviously graciously said yes. Was like, I'll do anything, you know, to what you want me to bring, you know, do catering for the sessions. What? and so we get to work on it and I go in for the first day and, like, she doesn't explain to me, like, hey, like, he's, you know, what's funny is in hindsight, I think she mentioned, like, there's going to be like 15 hours of recording, you know, for this movie, but I didn't process that part. So I was like convinced he was just going to, like, show up and like open the movie. So we were like recording the movie, recording the initial first scenes. And then I really start to realize that this is a story about him and, mm-hmm. and Izuku and their connection and the larger kind of implications of it all. And it became such a deeply, deeply, special thing because so much of what Rhodey had gone through, there were weird things, whether it was family stuff, certain just like life ups and downs. I had understood a lot of his journey in a way that felt very, like, unusual, as if it was like Colleen knew my life, you know? And I, wow. I remember we were doing a scene and I was like, how do you know me better than, like, we don't know each other. Like, at that point, we hadn't even met in person. She was just a voice in my ear, you know? And I remember getting really emotional one session because it just kind of all hit how much we were connected as a character. And I just thanked her for such a gift of an experience. And it's been such a gift of an experience. I adore him. And I remember the first time I heard Justin in my ear, because I hadn't met him. I had only heard him as Deku for, you know, and I was like, oh my God, it's Deku. You know, really, really fun. Yeah, I mean, that was a really surreal experience. And then getting to, like, you know, go to Comic-Con for it and take it around. And then when it went out, going to see it in theaters. And, you know, my family all live in different states from me, so they were all sending me pictures of, like, them with the movie poster. And
aww.
It was so trippy. And I was, you know, really nervous that people were going to kind of be rubbed the wrong way by Rhodey versus, like, getting, you know, the three boys, the whole thing that they're used to. And, you know, I mean, those badass suits were in the trailer, and then it's like not really so much in the movie. And I'm like, oh no, everyone's gonna like hate this guy. And the My Hero community just like came and rallied around him and, you know, accepted him in a way that I'm so grateful for and so moved by. So it really feels like he's been given such a good home.
Yeah, I love Rhodey so much. He quickly soared to be one of my favorite My Hero characters when I saw the film.
His gray area is so much fun. You know, he understands that the world is more complicated than, you know, good or bad. And I love how he and Deku bring out elements of each other's personality in ways that, like, I don't think they would have from other people in their lives. So, yeah, it's really special.
Yeah, definitely. Quick spoiler warning for the My Hero Academia World Class Heroes movie for the next question I have. So if you haven't seen it,
spoilers.
Skip ahead a few minutes if you haven't seen it. But I gotta know, like, how do you feel about Rhodey's quirk?
Oh, yeah. Well, I love it. I think it's so special.
Yeah.
I kind of had this, like, my personal canon for it when we were recording it, just is for something for me to kind of, like, work off of, was, because I remember the very first day we were recording, that's something Colleen told me. We had finished, like, the very first scene that, you know, opens his part of the movie, and she paused it, and she was like, okay, you see the bird? And I was like, yeah. She's like, so that's his quirk. And I'm like, what does that mean? And then she, like, you know, kind of explained it further. And, you know, when I realized, I thought it was such a beautiful, and especially by the end, the way that it is actually explained. And there's a line from that Justin does in it that kills me every time, when he's like, it's something like to the effect of, like, it's a quirk, you know, that means you can't lie. I think that's amazing, you know, and it's just like this really beautiful idea. To me, I always thought, because the idea of quirks, they manifest in times of trauma, right? Like they show themselves when you, like, are going through something, essentially. And, you know, you see in his childhood, he's, you know, well off, you know, his dad and his, you know, siblings, and they're doing their thing, but their mom's not around. And I always kind of imagined that whenever their dad disappears, that's when Pino kind of manifested as a quirk. And it was almost like, you know, the energy of their mom that kind of found a way back to them in a way, you know, which I'm sure is not the case, but it's just, to me, what I kind of would tell myself, because I thought that was a really nice, you know, sweet, you know, my mom's always been a kind of guiding North Star to me, and she's always been so kind and loving, but also, like, you know, she doesn't, you know, take bullshit. So I loved that, you know. So to me, that was my interpretation.
Yeah, I love that. I could absolutely, that's my headcanon now.
Most definitely. I want to move into our My Happy Marriage questions. It's only...
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So your role as the mysterious Kazushi Tatsuishi was great.
Thank you.
Do you have plans on working in more shoujo anime, possibly as a role as well?
I mean, you know, it's that weird thing where, like, we never, like, it doesn't matter who you are or what you've previously done. Like, we don't get to choose what we audition for. It's a lot of the time it is, you know, what productions are happening at that time and where they're happening. And, you know, sometimes things are need to get put together really quickly. You know, I don't get to see everything that is, you know, constantly being auditioned, but as far as shoujo anime stuff, I mean, I'm always open to all of it. You know, for me, I love working on anything. I work on, you know, live action dubs. I work on video games. I work on any kind of genre thing. To me, it's I love getting to play in different characters' skin and have those different experiences. And it was so charming and so fun. I'm not as familiar with, you know, other stories in that particular genre. So it would be more of a thing where, like, you know, if the auditions showed up for something, I probably wouldn't even know until, you know, after the fact.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, even getting to work on Saint's Magic Power, which was a light novel and also very sweet and saccharine and, you know, so different from a lot of the stuff that I do end up working on. I love getting to sit in that space. I'm a total mush, so I love romancey stuff.
Yeah. I guess to follow up from that, like, are there any particular genres that you would potentially like to see shoujo anime in, like a more action-based one that's sort of similar to My Happy Marriage, or I don't know, slice of life like Fruits Basket?
You know, my favorite kind of stuff is always like, I mean, I loved recently, there was a, and this is just a TV show, but there was a take on Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Donald Glover, and it was phenomenal. And I love a good spy story. So I say, you know, throw in some kind of secret spy stuff, or, you know, put me on like another planet and make it like a Star Wars kind of, you know, like give me that intergalactic love of madness and warfare. And yeah, give me
like
the whole
sci-fi
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love a good genre spin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, there's
so
a plane
cool.
going over.
Oh, that's okay. I live by an airport, so it happens all the time on my end, so no worries.
This is my my voiceover booth behind me, so anytime we do sessions from home, there's always inevitably a moment of like, hold for plane.
I completely relate.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into a couple Chainsaw Man questions.
Sure.
We had some YouTuber friends send over some questions. So
right on.
Here is a question from YouTuber BDA Law. So do you try to mimic the tendencies of the Japanese voice actor for Denji, or do you just try to focus on your performance to give it your own like personal flavor?
Definitely the second one. Not that I disregard, you know, what they're doing in the Japanese, but to me, my approach to doing any of this has always been servicing the character, you know? Mm. My job is not to do what they do in Japanese. My job is to do what Denji needs in, you know, in our version of this. And so much of it, you know, whether it's cultural things that don't translate, this, that, whatever, like, that stuff's already done by script adapters and everyone by the time it's getting to us, so really, to me, especially with Denji, where, you know, sometimes you work on a show where you're just getting brought in for a bit part. You may not have context. You may not, you know, it's a different kind of thing. And you may trust the guideline of intention and stuff like that. But for something like Denji, where I had sat with him personally for so long and had my own feelings and all of that about him so strongly, I went into it really just kind of like with a very specific idea of what I wanted to do. And thankfully, you know, having such an incredible director and friend in Mike to be there to help, you know, guide me with it and trust me with choices as well, because he knew how much I really cared about it. I really just think that ultimately that's any of our job is what does the character need and how much can I be honest to their moment, their intention, their needs, you know, in that way. And I mean, you know, the other thing is you're never going to make everybody happy. So I feel like it would be I wouldn't be being truthful to what I'm giving, you know, if I'm focusing on trying to do what I think is going to make someone happy.
Right.
You know, something like this in a weird way, it's like, I'm going to be selfish, you know, and, and just give this my all in the way that I think he needs it to be. And I'm really grateful that it's connected with people, because the last thing I wanted to do is make Denji not feel right to people. You know, I want people to put it on and be like, that's my guy, you know, not for me, but for... I know what it's like when you watch a thing that you care about, you know, like, and I want people to feel connected to it. So I knew that if I thought too much about catering to, you know, anything that came before me, it wasn't going to be genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Another EDA question. Power or Makima?
Well, I mean, I guess because the question's like also vague enough that it doesn't really describe what to get out of that. So just going to say power is the ultimate homie. I'm going to say that. Power is my ride or die.
I like that answer.
Yeah.
Well, we have...
Especially because me and Sarah get along way too well. She's like my knucklehead buddy.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm sure that also helps with like the voice chemistry in the show as well, that you guys get on so well.
Well, that's both something... I mean, the entire cast is amazing. But like the four of us or the other three, you know, Reagan, Sarah, and Susie, they are so extraordinary. And I adore them so much. And we have become such a family. But it also is, you know, a testament to Mike being such an amazing director and casting director in the way that, like, you have to, when you're putting these shows together and you're putting these casts together and you're getting thousands of auditions in, it's not just about who's sending in the best audition. There's a lot of best auditions. There's a lot of people who sound right, this, that, whatever. But then it's like, okay, put this Aki with this Denji with this power. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Does that feel right? Like, that's the hardest part, is getting the puzzle to fit. And I think Mike just like made this magic trick happen with everybody. Like when he told me, when he called me and told me my part, he was like, do you want to know who everybody else is? And I'm like, yes, please let me know. And when he rattled off their names, I was like, perfect. This is just money.
Oh, fantastic. So we are going to move on to a question from YouTuber Vocal Pineapple.
That's a great name.
It's great.
Yeah.
Pineapple says, Denji is often misunderstood as a character. What is it like to play a character whose motivations constantly change while Denji realizes that happiness and normalcy are fleeting concepts and he will always be chasing them when, in reality, what his heart truly wants, even more than a warm bed, is to be the Chainsaw Man?
Oh, that is so good. Oh, man, that's the best. I'm so glad that was the question, because I feel like a lot of the time the question, people just go to the boob thing and then I have to explain literally everything that they just said. Pineapple, double high fives, Pineapple. I mean, first off, beautifully, eloquently stated. All of that is exactly the stuff that I think about with Denji, is like he's an incredibly complicated and layered character for someone that is quote unquote simple minded, you know? I love that he's more intellectual than he realizes. I love that he, you know, for someone who has no education, has no grounding whatsoever, and yet he is putting together these moments of understanding of like how deeply complicated life is, even when he thought like all he wanted was XYZ. I love the struggle. It's heartbreaking. You know, I think there's a lot of Denji that is still deeply locked away within himself that he is still not even really willing to deal with, which is why I also think so much of it is like kind of running in these two directions for him. So much of my approach of playing him, especially, you know, in these first 12 episodes, is it's micro adjustments of like when you first meet him, you know, in the first episode, he's still all alone and he's really crumpled up and extra, you know, kind of quiet and smushed in there. And his confidence and his cockiness and his brashness and all of that stuff starts to kind of grow more as he gets, you know, more and more comfortable with being out in the world and learning about it. But I think he's, you know, all in all, he's this sad, lost little boy who still doesn't really know how to, like, he doesn't know what the right direction is. He doesn't know what the answer is, but he feels like, you know, it's like, I think what he understands is that regardless, everybody's kind of getting thrown around in their own version of choices they don't have full control over. So I think he looks at the idea of Chainsaw Man as his form of control or his sense of freedom. But I also don't think he understands where that can lead him or what that ends to a mean is. So I don't think he hasn't had the luxury of thinking stuff through that far down the line, you know, of like what comes next. I think he's so trained and has so unfortunately continued to because of now just it's almost like, you know, his freedom is a lie. You know, he's still technically, you know, he's not fully free. And I think so much of that is his struggle of trying to find that. But it's so deeply, deeply complicated. Obviously, there's stuff I'm skirting around saying so much because I don't want to spoil things. Like, there's certain elements of it. But yeah, I mean, what a beautifully, beautifully asked question. I think so much of that is just, that is who Denji is. It's that, oh, hello, cat.
Soleil's always got to make an appearance.
Who's the cat? Yes.
It's Soleil, my little sweet Soleil, angel.
Soleil, oh my gosh, you're beautiful.
Yes.
Our podcast mascot and my beautiful niece. Yes.
You can join.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But I mean, even watching Chainsaw Man for Gianna and I, because we reviewed it for Patreon, that's something that we kept on pondering, especially after the first season ended, was just like, you know, I wonder how Denji is going to grow, but then also realize that this freedom that he thinks that he has isn't exactly as freeing as it should be.
And you know, I think that the thing also is, you know, Denji's not a clearly not a perfect person. Like, he is is far from, you know, I think that as much as, you know, we feel like you know, protective over him and like, oh, he's this goober, you know, like, he's also he also is an individual who makes choices, good or bad or in between. And I think you know, that's what to me is so special about him, is that he's not, it's not always the right choice. It's not always the, quote, good choice. It doesn't mean he's doing things out of ill will. But I think, you know, he makes mistakes just like you do in life. And I think, you know, his mistakes may be a little bit larger because of the sheer kind of scope of what he's experiencing. But I mean, you know, to even remotely try and put yourself in a situation like that, it's hard to think of, like, how would I handle that, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How differently would I actually approach these things if this was my life, you know?
Yeah.
Changing gears, I guess, but still within Chainsaw Man, in a way. Do you have a particular favorite story from one of the times that the Chainsaw Man cast was all together at a convention?
Oh, there's so many good ones. I mean, a lot of the times it's like getting to just laugh with everybody. I mean, sometimes it'll be, you know, a question at a panel. I mean, Sarah will say the most wonderfully unhinged things that I just, you know, will make me guffaw. I mean, the most special one, I think, just like the easiest one to rattle off, was when we brought the very first episode to New York Comic Con in October of 22. It was like a few weeks before we were putting the show out for everybody. And it was, you know, me, Reagan, Sarah, Susie, and Mike, which is not often the case to have all of us and our director at a thing. And, you know, they had us do a panel in front of like 5,000 people. And then we showed the episode and, like, you know, it was this cavernous, crazy experience where, you know, everybody was seeing it for the first time and people were screaming and freaking out. And, you know, it was, we got to dress up in our, you know, Devil Hunter outfits, and it just, it was so electric. I mean, it was such a whirlwind, and it felt like we were all getting to be a part of something that we so deeply believed in, and it really like solidified us as a family. You know, we've had so many great experiences since then together in different ways, because as we're all traveling, we don't always all get to be at the same shows and stuff, but that one in particular, I think, just solidified us as a family. And it was great because we had only recorded the first episode, which really was mostly just me and Mike, you know, and everybody else got to come in, you know, from then on out. So it was then a few weeks after that we then started going like week to week with the show. And by then we were, you know, a cohesive unit. So, yeah, that weekend just laughing and getting dinners and really like getting, you know, connected to each other in a way that, you know, we hadn't fully gotten to before, because half our cast is here in LA and half's in Texas, and it's all over the place. So yeah, it's kind of forever special anytime we get to all get together.
Yeah, that sounds magical, honestly. Yeah,
I love it. I was at New York Comic Con then, so it was like,
you were? Yeah. Were you at that premiere?
I like snuck, like I got in. I was in the back. Yeah. But yeah.
So oh, that's really, so cool.
It was really cool to like see. I was with For All Nerds at the time. But
oh, that's amazing. I remember when we did the panel part of it, for whatever reason, like I was totally cool there on stage. And then like we walked down and they sat us in the audience, and then the episode started and my whole body started shaking. I was just like,
Well, we have one more Chainsaw Man question for you.
Sure.
And that is, what can people look forward to with the next season of Chainsaw Man and your portrayal of Denji, if you're allowed to say?
Well, I mean, right now we don't have any season 2 info, but we do have the movie news. So
awesome.
That is the most exciting thing. And what's really cool about that, I mean, you know, we only know as much as everybody else knows about the movie right now, is that it's happening. But for those who are unaware or uninitiated or not reading the manga, without spoiling anything, I can happily say that the movie is the next arc from where the first season leaves off. So
oh, great.
It is literally like just continuing the story. So essentially, this is what season 2 would have been anyway. So this is just right where it leaves off, and it's just a bullet train. So, you know, I don't know how they're planning on kind of rolling it out as we go on, but I mean, it is, as someone who is continuing to read it, it is so incredibly special. And the particular story that they have contained in what will be the film is one of my favorite arcs personally in all of what they call part one. I think it's the arc that when everybody reads it, that is really what like makes them want to consume the rest of this story, because like in my opinion, those first 12 episodes, it's like you're barely scratching the surface of what the story is, of what the possibilities are. Like, if you think that's crazy, just wait. It's barely begun. So okay. I'm really excited for just the characters introduced, the way that the premise gets expanded on, and just the sheer insanity and fun that it's going to bring. And for it to be on the big screen is going to be wild. So we haven't you know, begun working on it or anything. I don't know the details as far as that goes, but I am so ready. I am so ready.
Can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah, and to see the premiere parts, too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. The whole just all of that is going to be just crazy. And I mean, there are parts, you know, in this section in the manga that I've been waiting theoretically to do. So yeah, very excited.
Okay, we have some voice acting questions that we want to ask. So, you have spoken about wanting to see more Arab representation in voice acting. Do you feel like the roles that you're taking are showing the versatility that can be found in actors from your community?
I think it's, you know, it's not a super simple question. Because I think part of it is, you know, wanting to see characters properly portrayed in writing and storytelling and all that kind of stuff, first and foremost, which I actually think in a cool way, I'm starting to see more of that actually showing up. I mean, I think, you know, it's still a little thing, but I think change takes time. And I think a lot of Arab and Middle Eastern culture is still very obtuse to a lot of people. You know, I'm actually really psyched that like Dune really helps in a weird way. I think Dune kind of like, you know, I think there are certain things where like, even if it's just culturally, people kind of slowly kind of getting more accustomed to things. You know, I've definitely noticed in video games and stuff like that, there's more attention to it in a really cool way. But also for me as an actor, I mean, my biggest thing when I was growing up as a kid that stopped me from pursuing acting for so long at first was I looked at it and went, well, there aren't people who look like me playing characters irrelevant of, like, the point isn't that there's an Arab character. The point wasn't right. Like, I didn't see people that looked like me, so I didn't think I had a place. And, you know, the fact that I can, you know, now play characters, you know, that may have been, you know, like you think of, oh, X actor would have normally been given this role because it's the hero role and whatever. And, you know, like the, you think about Hollywood, it's like the Brad Pitt, Leo DiCaprio, whatever, you know, I aspire to being like, you know, how do we get more people from different cultures into parts that don't necessarily require it to be a cultural obligation, but as much as a like, why can't you also just be the hero of said story or this or that or whatever? And I think that is little by little starting to change. But as far as like the proper cultural representation part, I think that has to come story first, you know, versus like wedging in a character to a thing. Cause then I don't think it's necessarily genuine either or necessarily for the right reasons. And I don't think it's about just like overloading and just doing stuff to do it. You know, I think we can all agree on both ends. Like, as much as we want to see representation, we don't want to see it like a deflated balloon just because like someone's trying to be like, look, isn't this great that we've got like, you know, like if somebody puts out a show and like it's an all Arab cast, but the show doesn't like isn't made well. And then we're like, well, whoops, uh-oh. You know, like, so I think it's so much about everything with care and context and timing and all of that. But I've been so, so excited in these last few years. I think we've seen admittedly a lot of things changing, you know. You know, when you also consider projects take a lot of time to make. I mean, video games have cycles of 5 to 7 years, you know, shows, you know, like all these things. It's not like people can just snap their fingers and be like, all right, you know, like everything we're doing now is different. So I have to say I'm really impressed by a lot of what's going on in the industry, trying to shift things around and really bring out more. There's obviously still plenty that needs to get fixed and worked on, but I think especially since 2020 and these conversations have really started to happen in that way, I think we're finally seeing, you know, the fruits of that start to happen. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, everyone just being open to telling true, great stories and seeing that all of these different cultures have so much to offer for ourselves, for each other. There's so much we can learn from each other and grow with from each other. So I'm always hopeful for more, but always with the right, you know, intention. And I would much rather wait for quality things. And in the meantime, I'm just super excited about getting to have opportunities that I didn't think someone like me would have. You know, that to me is really special. And there's so many new people coming up. I mean, I still consider myself new. I've only started a couple of years ago, you know, and at the same time, now I'm seeing even more people that I'm like, oh, that person wasn't here 2 years ago and blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, it's cool. There's more people coming up and there's definitely a wave of wonderful actors from all over making names for themselves and moving the pedestal forward.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you rise above the ableist conversations online that discount dubbed anime as less than subbed anime?
I just don't care. I mean, like,
it's valid.
Like, it's really real. Like, I think the internet is hyperbolic by nature. It's the internet. You know, before I got into doing this, you know, I've always looked at art being subjective. Like, I could walk out of a movie and my opinion could be like, that sucked, you know, like, and that's just as valid as the person who walked out and loved it. So my personal feeling is I just want people to enjoy how they enjoy. I mean, I think there are plenty of people who say things just to say things or get a rise out of people or whatever. You know, I just don't think the like the sub versus dub thing is as real as people want it to be on the internet. You know, when I meet people in person, I meet tons of people who come up to me and they're like, I normally watch subbed anime, but we love Chainsaw Man or whatever, you know, like, and mm-hmm. I don't, to me, it's not even a matter of like, it's not pride one way or the other. It's not picking a side. I think, you know, I remember what it's like being a kid and associating myself so deeply with, like, if I liked punk rock, I couldn't like this. You know, like, I think a lot of people are young and they consider, you know, certain things a part of their identity and how they associate with stuff and it's sources of pride for them or whatever. So, like, I let people just, you know, my whole thing is, like, don't yuck somebody else's yum. You know, I wish that... Yeah. Other people didn't feel bad or be made to feel bad about having their feelings and opinions and tastes. But like, you know, there's such extraordinary performances happening right now in dubs. And like, mm-hmm. there's so much amazing stuff happening that like, you can't discredit it. People could say what they want, but like, that's just their subjective opinion, which they are totally allowed to have. But like, I genuinely could not care less.
Yeah, completely valid.
Yeah.
So as a fellow musician myself, I just want to squeeze in
what
some
do you
music.
Play?
So my main instrument I would say is piano and I sing. Cool. But for my job I had to learn drums and bass as well. So I just go around the thing a lot.
That's very impressive.
Thank you so much. So I just really was hoping to ask you a couple music questions if
sure.
that's okay. So
absolutely.
Having moved on professionally from music to acting, do you still make time for playing music or songwriting?
It's been a long time, admittedly, but I do. I mean, my two best friends and weird to say ex-bandmates, but we still kind of consider ourselves a band, even though we're not a band anymore. Mm-hmm. So my bandmates, you know, we all live here in Los Angeles with each other. We've, while we all have very different career paths and lives and everything, we've actually recently have been talking about, you know, just kind of messing around on stuff together because we do love it. We miss doing it. I don't know that we'll ever be like, time to, you know, make a record and get back on the road, you know, but
yeah.
I do think that like, we still have so much music that we like from when we were together that we never had finished. And, you know, we're kind of just digging back into it. And I think in a way now, because we don't need it to work in the way that we, thought that we needed it to work then, I think a lot of the joy that we had when we first started as a band will kind of be there. So I'm excited to just kind of mess around in a rehearsal space. But I mean, like, there's no real grand aspiration at the moment. But I think, I mean, as you know, being a musician, it never goes away.
Of course.
You know, your brain is always just wired for it. So like, if I picked up a guitar right now, I could still... You know, like it's there, you know, and I do think that there's something therapeutic to it. So, yeah, one way or another, it'll happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you mind sharing, like, are you a songwriter as well? Like,
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite subject to write about?
Oh, that's interesting. I never really thought about that. I mean, maybe dreams.
Ooh, like aspirations or like dreams, like
no,
sleeping
like
dreams.
I think like sleeping dreams, like oh. dream logic and kind of the kind of surreal way that your mind sends you messages and tries mm-hmm. to teach you things or, you know, bring awareness to you. I've always found dreams to be a very interesting place to occupy. And there's an abstractness to how you can write lyrics there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm very intrigued by dreams as well. So I should try that. I should try writing a song about dreams.
You know, get a book on like lucid dreaming and like try practicing lucid dreaming and then like, you know, do the whole thing.
All right. Yeah, I should definitely do that. I'll ask one more music question.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of half joking, but theoretically, if you were speaking to a professional musician who has an interest in voice acting, what would your advice to them be? Asking for a friend.
Yeah, I mean, I would say first and foremost, like, you know, if they're a singer, that definitely is a leg up as far as like understanding the technical aspect of like being around a microphone and using your dynamics of your voice and knowing how to like do that part of it. But I would highly, highly recommend acting classes first and foremost, because, you know, that's the most important part. I think a lot of people, you know, like musicians, you will inherently have like your timing is going to be really solid. Like there's certain things that like you won't even have to think about that someone else, you know, someone who isn't a musician pursuing the craft may also have to like work that muscle along with acting training.
Mm-hmm.
But like someone who is so locked in with, you know, rhythm and timing and their vocal cords and all that kind of stuff, like that's all stuff that then becomes second nature. And you can really just hyper focus on the acting training part of it, because the thing that I think is the biggest misconception about voice acting as a potential career. One, I also always say it is a lifestyle. It's a job if we're lucky, and it's a career if we're really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But just like being a musician, like, you know, you don't start a band and go like, well, it's because we're famous. It's like you do it and you're penniless and you're starving, but you're like, I love it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. You know, I think a lot of people assume, you know, the misconception with voice acting is like, oh, I've got a cool voice, or, you know, like whatever. Your voice is the least important part, as long as you can make sounds great. But like, it's who you are and what you bring to the table with your soul and your heart and your intentions, mm-hmm. and your interpretations of things that is going to make your voice do what it needs to do and stand out in a way. So, you know, when, you know, from the perspective of like a casting director, when they're getting auditions from, you know, it's like 100 people send in for one role and everybody's getting the same dialogue, the same information about the character, the same whatever, like there's a really strong chance that 80 to 90% of those auditions are going to sound almost identical, just with like slightly different timbres of voice. And that's not what's going to make somebody stand out. It's going to be performance choices and how much do they connect with the material and how much does the person cast and go like, oh, that feels like the character.
Mm-hmm.
So much of that comes from training and understanding and all of that stuff. And it's like going to the gym. You know, if you want to train something, you have to, you know, focus on it and work it out. And it's a great place to learn how to be vulnerable and comfortable with yourself and confident with making weird choices, that being okay with making a choice that might fall on its face. You know, like so much of being an actor professional is being vulnerable professionally,
mm-hmm.
and not crumbling under pressure if, you know, someone's like, that's not good. Like, do, you know, like that take is whatever it is, you know, like that kind of stuff can happen. Not, you know, for the most part, directors are very kind, but like, you know, some people can be tougher. It can be a career where it's like, 'cause we're all vulnerable, emotional beings. And like, by the time you get to a position where you're lucky enough, you know, or fortunate enough to have a voiceover job as an opportunity, like you want to show up to that thing like a sharpened knife that can be there for what they cast you for, but also make a hard left if they need you to, or present them with a totally different flavor than what they were expecting if they're stuck on something. And like, instead of going in there panicking about like, oh my God, am I going to crumble? I have 2 hours. Am I going to make it out of that thing alive?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't come from, I've watched a bunch of stuff and played a bunch of video games, that come from, I've been reading and training and doing scene study and improv classes. And like, you know, you become efficient in every way, shape and form. And we do it because we love it, because we're nerds, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my really long suggestion.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's my absolute pleasure.
I guess we can move into our final questions.
Sure.
So you put out different affirmations all the time on Twitter. Do you mainly do it to encourage the people around you and your fans, or are you speaking to yourself?
You know, that's a wonderful question. I think it's both. I think it's always kind of both, because as much as it is really more an affirmation for others to, because I think in a weird way, it's so easy for anybody on any given day to just get lost in the noise, you know, and forget really simple things. And I know for me throughout my life, you know, it's that thing of like when you're in school and, you know, you're sitting in the hallway because you've just been having a bad day and like somebody comes up to you and kicks your shoe and makes you laugh about something. And like to me, that is like a moment of like it's like a hug, you know, and I look at how fortunate I've been to have such an amazing community that's like rallied around me doing this crazy job. I never thought people would care. And for people to be so kind and be so supportive all the time in this space, and for me not to, it's impossible to know all of these people, to access all of them, to be able to reach all of them. And I'll never be able to let people know how truly grateful I am and how much I truly appreciate them. So it's sort of just little ways of hoping the people that need to see it, you know, and it can, you know, because I know for me, when I am feeling out of it, sometimes it is just a simple thing, whether it's words from someone or just something that can just knock me back into like, you know, alignment in a way. And that's my hope out of doing it, you know, especially because, like I said before, to me, the internet is so hyperbolic. It's so messy, you know, and it's not real life. It's not. It's really easy to forget that because we spend so much of our time on it. And especially during the pandemic, it was all we had to the outside world. And it's so easy to be consumed by that space, good or bad. You know, it can inflate one's ego and it can deflate one's soul. And I think there, you know, I think you have to be weary of both of those things. And to me, to have a quote platform where people are paying attention, I just want to do my bit of good on there. You know, I don't look at it as a space to like be super, you know, grandstandy on stuff. Everybody does what they want with their, you know, their space on there. But for me, it's like, I don't need to add more to the negativity or the noise or the chaos or whatever the usual thing is going on for that week. Like, I would much rather focus on if that one person, you know, somewhere in some other state is, you know, having a rough day and, you know, this one thing might make that day a little bit better. Like, that's really all it is. And yeah, like, it's always for yourself too, in a weird way, because I think there's something, and it kind of like circles back. We're all so bad at self-empowerment and like believing in ourselves and being good to yourselves. And I just think it's almost like, whether it's societal training in like the American way or the global way at this point, I feel like we all have to get better at being kinder to ourselves. And, you know, there is that difference. Again, it's not like ego. It's not an ego trip to love yourself. That is a basic necessity of survival. So I think, you know, so many people throw out self-care and self-love because they think, oh, I can't be selfish or this or that or whatever. And that's just, it's such a backwards mentality. You can't care for the things and the people and handle those things the way that you want if you can't take care of yourself first. And I just want people to know that they're more valuable than they think they are. You know, I think it's easy to see so much else going on and be like, well, I'm not that, you know. Mm.
It definitely doesn't go unseen. I know I can speak for myself personally when I was like, wow, this guy who played Rhodey Soul, like, looked up on social media. I'm like, oh, like, this is really nice, like, positive things I'm seeing, like, absolutely going to follow. So, no, I do personally appreciate seeing your positivity in my feed. You know, it does really brighten my day personally. I'm sure I can say, speak for
Same
a lot
for
of
me.
Us. Yeah.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Of course. You. So we have one final question for you as we are.
I refuse. No.
Everybody clicks off. No. So as we are Shoujo Sunday today, we are Shonen Sunday. Yeah. We want to know, what does your ideal ice cream sundae include?
Oh, wow. You're really going to give me the hardest question last. My gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. All right, I'm going to get weird with it. We're going to go Denji style. We're going to do like super toast. It's going to be like Neapolitan, except it's going to be, instead of like the classic, we'll get strawberry in there because strawberry's awesome. Then we'll do pistachio. Okay. And then we'll do coffee ice cream.
You know what? Yeah. Coffee had to come into this conversation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 100%. And I guess, you know what? We're going to do it almost like Banana Split style. We're going to have like the full with the whipped cream and the cherries and get some chocolate sauce on there. And I mean, you know what? Throw the caramel sauce. Throw it all on.
Yeah.
Throw everything. Yeah. Give me the whole thing.
Perfect. Yeah. That sounds great. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, thank you so much, Ryan, for joining us tonight.
It is my pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much. If you guys would like to keep up with Shoujo Sunday, technically Shonen Sunday today, you can follow us at Shoujo Sunday across all socials. If you are interested in our wonderful guest, Ryan, where can the people online find you? If they don't already.
Thank you for doing so, everybody. It's just my name, just Ryan Colt on Instagram and Ryan Colt Levy on Twitter, and all over the place trying to figure out this crazy, crazy technical world. I'm so grateful for you guys.
Thank you. We're so grateful for you, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And I am so grateful for the support, and so cool that you guys are doing this. I love how many shows have like come up in the last few years, and I hope you guys just keep blowing up more and more from here.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you so much. Yeah, this has been really nice, especially when you emailed back. Like, I'll be honest, every time you responded to our email, I got scared. Oh my gosh, he's really talking to... Yeah, I was like, wait.
Well, now you know I'm really not scary.
You're not scary at all. You're not.
No, not one bit.
No.
Now my emails will read very differently.
Yeah, it's just you're a very kind and warm person. It was just at the time I was just like, Gianna, oh god.
I'm gonna start writing in all caps from now on.
Right, or like the boomer ellipses, like.
Oh yeah, no, that's like death. That kills me. Yeah.
Me too. All right, just one last thank you to our patrons. All our patrons' names will be in the description of the video. Thank you so much. We could not have interviewed Ryan without you, truly. With that said, let's give a huge thank you to our patrons, starting with our Sprinkles patrons. We've got Pete, PJ, Miles, and Akemi. For our wonderful whipped cream patrons, we have Mary and Mark M. And for our hot fudge patrons, we have Mark D, Mackenzie, AJ, and Aaron. Thank you all so, so much for being our patrons. If you want to keep up with us individually, my name is Gianna Luna. You can follow me at Gianna_Luna_ across all socials and stream my debut single, Twilight Champagne, on any music platform.
Yo!
Thank you. Chica, how about you?
You guys can follow me on Blue Sky and on Instagram at Chica Supreme, and that's Chica with a K and not two C's.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will catch you next time. We will see you then. Bye. Yep.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Shonen Sunday podcast. If you would like to support us, please make sure to join the Shoujo Sunday Patreon and be part of the Hot Fudge tier, which will give you access to all of our Shonen catalog. In addition, you can leave Shoujo Sunday a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our current goal is to hit 200 5-star ratings. We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next time.